Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for December 20th, 2013. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics in Atchison, Kansas. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with Ben Priss of the Andersons in Everly, Iowa. In agricultural news, Brazil is moving forward with retaliatory plans against the U.S. cotton industry. We'll have that and other stories. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason will explore whether farmland values across the heartland have peaked. It's all on the Friday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
Let's see how futures settled on this Friday afternoon. May hard red winter wheat settled at 657 and three quarters, up four. July, 655 and three quarters, up one and three quarters. Soft May wheat settlement there, 620 and three quarters, up three and a quarter. July, 624 and three quarters, up three and three quarters. March corn settled at 433 and a quarter, up two and three quarters. July, 448 and a half, up three. January soybeans, the settlement, 1339, up 12. July, 1301 and a quarter, up 8 and a quarter. January soybean meal, 446.60, up 450. January soybean oil, 39.44, up 11. December's live cattle had a settlement of 132.45, up 65 cents. January feeder cattle, the settlement, 166.67 and a half. And it was down 12 and a half cents on the day. And then February lean hogs, the settlement 86.40, and it was up 2 1/2. And those are Friday afternoon's settlements from Chicago.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Leonard's weather highlights, he says pockets of dryness are still expected in southern Brazil, but all of the region will get rain a couple of times over the next 2 weeks, and that will slow any serious bouts of extreme stress. Argentina's most stressful weather thus far this growing season may be forthcoming late this weekend into the first half of next week, when temperatures will soar into the upper 90s to 105 degrees while dry or mostly dry conditions prevail. A first wave of relief will come to Argentina Wednesday into Friday next week as a cool front moves from southwest to northeast through the nation. Meanwhile, a weekend storm will produce 1 to 3 inches of rainfall from the northern U.S. Delta and southeastern Missouri area to Ohio, with some local totals possibly surpassing 4 inches. To the northwest of this region, there are likely to be 3 to 9/10 inches of moisture that will occur as rain, freezing rain, sleet, and snow. The area of greatest snow and ice accumulation will occur from Kansas and far southeastern Nebraska to Wisconsin and western Michigan. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics in Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon, Mike.
Dave, before we get into it, a Merry Christmas and Happy Holiday to you and all the listeners out there.
Well, that is so much appreciated, and right back at you. Corn market today. Boy, on the week, we had a lower low, and we carved out a 7.75 gain on the week. Is that constructive coming back for next week?
It's constructive. I don't think it's the end-all, be-all. We did close above the 20-day moving average, and of all the things that I track during the week in the trade, Dave, the best thing as far as percentage gains was January ethanol. Recall last week we had a 12% decline from Wednesday's high. We had an 8% gain this week, week over week. We're still about 12 cents a gallon from last week's high with January's close today. But I think the January ethanol tells a lot of the story of the corn market being able to recover. The fact that we had the March wheat down 2.4%, making 19-month lows, helps explain why the corn could not join the meal at the end of the week and join the beans to a lesser degree at the end of the week, with the Argentine weather coming out at the midday models coming out, still about the same precip, but some of the meteorologists raised their temperatures for Argentina to 105 to maybe even 108 degrees Fahrenheit before these rains kick in about 5 or 6 days. And so I think that really, along with the wheat market, you know, really that fought each other, and traders probably decided to spread off instead of just coming in on the flat price basis.
So how do they come in back next week? You've got 2 days, well, a day and a half of trade, a day off, and then 2 days of trade.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the weather will be the secondary focus to the GMO corn issue, and I think we traded a little bit of that today, but really no conclusion was made from what I saw in the news wires. No one spoke from the United States that I could see saying that, yes, we got it cleared up, or no, it's still rejected. And so I think that continues to be the hot potato. And I didn't mention that as far as a major reason why we came back this week. I think that goes back to the ethanol market and goes back to the Senate bill. The fact that we're going to crush probably 13.2, 13.3 as far as billion gallons of ethanol, and that keeps us up there at that 4.95 to 5 billion bushel crush for corn ethanol. I think the market came in and realized that once again and wanted to put that price back in. I have to say, without fresh political or sentiment-driven negativity and news to feed the bear, I think your earlier point when we talked this morning about the sideways or trading range or how you break it down, then it comes back at the end of the week, I think this goes back to the political and sentiment-driven news that we've gotten used to in this market, very short-term market. And when that news is absent and you go back to find the fundamentals for your reason for trading, those fundamentals are pretty supportive when you look at the demand side.
And you try to parse that U.S.-China corn trade issue out of the story by Bloomberg News from the chairman of Shanghai JC Intelligence Company, talking from Shanghai, quote, "It's certain now that China won't allow this variety any time soon, so that it's likely to deter more shipments." So on the face of it, it does appear that the efforts of USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack and other U.S. trade envoys didn't pry that loose, at least today.
You know, that's a really interesting point you bring that up. You're right on the money. And I just read, if you can get the Wall Street Journal online, I just read a phenomenal article about the U.S. and China ties. And I did not know this until this article by this reporter, but the dispute of those islands and the air defense zone that the Chinese declared a week or two ago. It says in the article that Washington, you know, the Obama administration and the State Department did not even know about this until about a few minutes before they made the declaration. And so I think this goes back to it's very high stakes what we're dealing with on the U.S.-Chinese GMO issue, because it's political and it relates to some of these other bigger foreign policy issues. And I sure would like to hear from USDA or the corn growers or the U.S. Trade Representative what they took away from the meeting before I put it away in the can and say, okay, it's done. We're not going to get an easy and quick approval here, and we're going to have to fight to get more corn into China.
We turn our attention to the soybeans, which in the January made a nice rally today before banging into that oh-so-stout concrete wall at 1345.
Yeah, you know, you really are at a point kind of opposing to what we just talked about in the corn where you need to feed the bull and the beans at this stage. I really think that we did see some demand slippage this week. Obviously, the export sales for beans and meal both being a marketing year low. These higher prices are starting to detract from traders or export markets really wanting to jump. You've got logistical issues. Your lineup at the Gulf is reportedly very, very serious right now and very long, and it's almost Brazil-like as far as getting ships in there from what I'm hearing. And so I think you really are at a point when we come back next week that if we are hot and dry, then we can go through those highs. But I think the trade will really want us to go through those highs by the time we go home for Christmas with the idea that you are probably needing fundamentally to feed the bull. I think the other thing that you know we talked about earlier today I won't spend a lot of time on is that cash meal market and the basis. If we remain 55 to 65 over the January and over the March, because January futures goes into delivery next week, then you know that's going to be a major play, just like the December going off and the January taking over this week.
So at the end of the day, those thinking about maybe doing some marketing are left thinking what?
Well, this is it. This is where it goes back to what we talked about probably 2 months ago when we had the best technical look in beans that we had had for quite some time. You get up towards that $575 to $600 a ton level at the Gulf, you're going to need to feed the bull. And so if you change the weather or you see China start to buy Brazil beans, you really need to step on the pedal for new crop bean sales. And I don't want to, that's the short-term 13, you know, mindset and the 14 mindset, but I will also say, and try not to talk out of both sides of my mouth, the acreage battle for 2014 is still feasible. If this weather stays dry, I've got to believe that what I'm hearing from producers, that they're losing corn acres in favor of beans, and if July and March beans lead the November higher, I've got to believe that the December corn is going to need to react positively so it doesn't lose more acres, especially if we're talking about Argentina, the number two corn exporter in the world.
And just before we let you go, anything to add to this discussion that we haven't touched on?
Well, we had the cattle on feed report today for you livestock
guys. Right.
Placements 97. That's about 3% below the trade guesses. Everything else was in the range of estimates, 94.5 on marketed, 95 on the 95 on marketed, 95 on feed as of December 1. The placements number, Dave, I would say would be bullish, but we just got done making all-time highs in feeder cattle this week. So we've also got monthly stochastics near 100%. I think maybe the more friendly side of the equation on these placements would be the deferred fat cattle, like the summer and fall fat cattle. They may see a nice jump out of these numbers today.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks. Happy holidays, Dave.
You too. Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics in Atchison, Kansas.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
In agricultural news, Brazil plans to begin consultations next month with domestic interests on what steps the country should take in light of a recent U.S. decision to discontinue agreed payments to Brazil's cotton industry. Earlier this week, Brazil's trade ministry said the discussions are intended as a preparatory act for an eventual retaliation. A work group at the trade ministry is preparing a list of possible measures to implement and will complete its preparations by February the 28th. The failure by U.S. Congress to pass a new farm bill by the end of fiscal 2013 has caused an interruption in annual U.S. payments to Brazil of $147 million. At a joint trade meeting today, China promised to ease restrictions on imports of U.S. beef and to speed up work on opening its market for government purchases of software and other goods. The pledges came as American and Chinese envoys ended a meeting of the annual U.S.-China Joint Commission on Commerce and Trade. A Chinese deputy commerce minister said that the two sides agreed to promote U.S. beef exports to China, but gave no details. A Chinese deputy agriculture minister said that the two sides will work on technical issues, but gave no timetable for when full-scale imports might be allowed. Beijing banned U.S. beef in 2003 due to fears of mad cow disease. The Canadian government has blocked restaurant chains from importing low-cost U.S. mozzarella. A senior U.S. trade official has bluntly warned Ottawa that the decision could harm its exporters and was made without proper notice or justification. The Canada Border Services Agency had previously ruled that U.S. cheese for pizza could enter Canada duty-free rather than with the normal 245.5% tariff that's designed to protect Canada's dairy industry. Trade experts said Ottawa's move could expose Canada to potentially costly trade disputes under the North American Free Trade Agreement, the World Trade Organization, or both. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. The price of U.S. farmland is on the minds of many in the agricultural world. They're wondering if it has peaked. Todd Gleason has some insight from the annual Iowa State University Land Values Survey. Gleason talked with the ag economist that has been putting the survey together for nearly three decades, Iowa State University's Mike Duffy. Gleason asked Duffy if there were times in the last 30 years that looked similar to the last 10 years.
The 70s, the rate of increase was actually a little higher, but that was the last boom in land values, 72, 73, 73, 74, and 75. Iowa land values went up 30% a year. And so we saw kind of a similar jump that we've seen. In 2012, we were up 24%. 32%, 16%. So we've been pretty similar. And then the last time it was like that was right prior to the Great Depression.
So if you look back to the early 1970s, the 72, 73, 74, how long did farmland values maintain their relative level before they broke?
They went up in Iowa. Our peak was in 1981, and some counties was a year earlier, but in general, 1981 was the peak, and then they dropped until 1986. They went at that time from $2,100 to $787 in that six-year period.
Yeah, and do you know what the Depression era timeline look like? Was it similar? So is it 3 or 4 years up and then 7 years to peak and then drop, or how did it go?
The timeline was longer. Land values actually moved upward from 1900 to 1910. Then they went off a little bit faster. 1919, 1920, they really went up. And then they started a rather slow descent from 1921, and they bottomed out in 1933. So we had the first mortgage depression in agriculture, and then when we had Black Friday and the Great Depression start, land values continued to drop. So they dropped 75% in the 13-year period.
I know you said that this looks like it's a place where land value is deciding which direction it wants to go. Do you, from the data set or personally, have a prediction as to which direction it might go?
Well, I think if our income continues to look like the forecast have, we'll see land values decrease. And I think they will decrease about 80% of what the decrease in income is. So I would anticipate maybe 20% drop in land values over the next 4 or 5 years. I don't think we're going to see the major collapses that we saw in the early 80s, but I do think we'll see an adjustment. We're in a kind of precarious time, though, because, you know, we've had droughts here, flooding, and that corn supply can jump up and down, and when it does, prices move, income moves, land values move.
That's Iowa State University ag economist Mike Duffy. He spoke to Todd Gleason. Ben Pruss of the Andersons in Everly, Iowa, is away from his desk this afternoon, so we welcome in for cash grain analysis Greg Johnson of the Andersons out of Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Greg.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Did you guys have a corn pile this year or no?
We did. It wasn't out very long, and we got it picked up ahead of these rainstorms. We got it picked up about 2.5 weeks ago. So we did have about 2 million bushels out on the ground. Some years we have as much as 4, normal is 2 to 3. So not as much as usual, but we did have some out on the ground this year.
And the elevator's all chocked full at this point, I suppose.
Not chocked full. We've got trains scheduled to come in, but we've still got enough room for operating room. We think by the time January rolls around and the farmers start hauling in grain out of the bins that we'll have enough space if the trains show up on time.
Which brings me specifically to the marketing between now and the end of the year. Futures has had a slight upward tone to it. Our analysts say that you could see potentially something at the end of the year if everything falls into place, 440 March, and with bases maybe staying in there. Do you think there's a marketing window here?
I think so. As long as producers are willing to lower their sights, a lot of them are still waiting for $5 corn, and some are lowering their sights to 450, but if you're realistic and shoot for that 440 March futures target, I think you've got a very good chance of seeing that.
So there's a lot of people still in the $5 camp.
Well,
when you have those discussions, what do you say?
Well, I mean, you know, if it's, we basically say I think you're counting on a weather problem this coming growing season, and that's 6 months away. So if, you know, depending on how long you want to hold on to the corn, they may be right, but that's an awful long time to hold on to old crop corn.
A word about soybeans, please.
The soybeans seem to run out of steam at $13.50 on the nearby contract. I think we've hit that 2 or 3 times, and so far we just can't seem to close above that level. But it is hot and dry in Argentina, so that might give us enough of an oomph to get through that $13.50 level. But keep in mind that in Argentina, the bean crop just was planted not too long ago, and so the beans are relatively small. And if you have to be hot and dry, I guess this is probably the right time for those beans to be hot and dry,
yeah.
And Brazil's in good shape.
A little bit early to be a weather scare.
Yes, something to keep an eye on, but I wouldn't say we've done any irreversible damage yet.
Let me go ahead and get your prices today.
Okay, cash corn is $4.25 for December or January, next fall $4.36. The beans are $13.39 for December or January. Next fall is $11.44, and new wheat is $6 even.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Thanks, Dave.
That's Greg Johnson of the Andersons, and he is in Champaign, Illinois. In 2 minutes, I'll be back with a look at agricultural weather with Jim Angel, state climatologist for Illinois. It's National Sangria Day. It's also St. Dominic of Silos Day, patron of shepherds. On this day in agricultural history in 1790, the first successful cotton spinning machine built using American resources began in Pawtucket, Rhode Island. Samuel Slater was the first in the U.S. to reliably duplicate cotton spinning machines. Slater had immigrated secretly from England in 1789, with details of Richard Arkwright's machines memorized while an apprentice in a mill. In 1868, Harvey Samuel Firestone was born. An American industrialist, he started the Firestone Tire and Rubber Company in 1900. In 1906, he teamed up with Henry Ford to provide tires for the Model T. By the 1930s, nearly a quarter of all tires used in the U.S. came from Firestone. His innovations included non-skid tire treads, low-pressure balloon tires, and farm tractor tires. In 1879, Thomas Edison privately demonstrated his incandescent light at Menlo Park, New Jersey. Edison found that cotton filaments could operate for 40 hours inside a glass bulb vacuum. And in 1928, Harry Ramsden opened what would become eventually one of the most famous fish and chips restaurants in the world. The business began in a wooden hut, which still stands today alongside the main restaurant, which seats 250 people. And that's This Day in Agricultural History. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for our look at agricultural weather is Illinois State climatologist Jim Angel. Good afternoon, Jim.
Good afternoon.
We have a little something coming our way. Actually, it's not a little something. It is a relatively huge something. In fact, for this time of year, it's the size of it is pretty remarkable.
That's right. We have this very large system coming through, and for most of Illinois, the big story is going to be the amount of rainfall that we're going to get. You go look at southern Illinois, and they're looking at potential, anyway, of 2 to 5 inches of rain across
wow.
much of the southern third of the state. So not quite so wet here in Champaign-Urbana, but we have at least the potential of getting over an inch, maybe an inch and a half of rain out of this in the next couple of days. So it's going to be pretty gloomy. You know, it's not too bright out right now. And the chance of rain is pretty much with us through tonight and tomorrow night and into Sunday. It'll kind of taper off, and maybe we'll see some snow flurries at the very end there. But it's going to be very wet as we move through the next 2 days.
I was going to ask you, as this huge storm moves to the east behind it, does not more air potentially pull into it that's cold, with a chance for freezing rain, for slush, for sleet, for snow, for a whole wintry mix of opportunity, huh?
That's right. In fact, right now the forecast is that we're kind of on the dividing line here in east central Illinois. To the north of it's going to be a lot of freezing rain in the next couple of days, and far northern Illinois is going to get a lot of snow out of this. But, you know, if the system tracks a little bit farther to the south, that might pull some of that colder air into our region. So we might see some freezing rain and drizzle. At least there's that possibility as we move forward. So it's really going to be kind of tricky, and it's probably one of these things where you're really going to have to watch the forecast, especially if you're traveling.
This December has just been flat-out weird. I don't know if that's a technical term or not, but it's been colder than average on many days, and yet you get these thunderstorms out of nowhere.
That's right. I mean, today is downright balmy outside. It's in the 50s degrees range, and it's kind of humid out there. And it's amazing how fast the snow disappeared. You know, we had 7 inches of snow on the ground yesterday, and right now it's pretty much gone. There's a few piles of snow, but what's out in the grass has pretty much disappeared. So it's a big change in the landscape there.
So here's the question for you, and we got about 30 or 40 seconds for you to answer it. Is this trend going to continue into January?
It's very possible. If we look at what's happened so far, cold and dry, it looks like at least out to the 14-day forecast that cold, dry conditions will continue. So I think we're going to at least start out the new year on the cold and dry side.
Thank you very much, Jim.
You're welcome.
That's Illinois State climatologist, Jim Angel, and that is today's Closing Market Report. Hey, remember to tune in to Commodity Week. You can do that on the web side of things this afternoon, almost immediately. In fact, I think it's been posted already. Go to our website at willag.org, click on the Commodity Week link, and it is right there for you. Or, of course, you can listen to it on Saturday morning at 11:30 Central Time. This is Dave Dickey.